I learned about these monks who had exiled themselves to an island off the coast of Scotland called Iona. And without the work of these monks, it is strongly suggested in a book called How the Irish Saved Civilization that we would have lost the Bible. We would have lost many of the great writings of the church fathers. Why? Because what these monks did is they took copies of these things in these little boats with them as they fled Ireland, and they took animal skins and they printed very carefully on the animal skins from these scrolls. Why animal skins? Because if you live near the ocean, scrolls will decay. Animal skins won't. And so they did this. And then, as time went on, they went back into the continent of Europe. And you need to know this. We all think, okay, the church started, and then the church grew, and that was that. That is not how it happened. The church grew explosively, and then we had all kinds of threats against the church, and these threats were real. And in most cases, in fact, you could say for the continent of Europe, the church was wiped out. And there was this little cadre of monks who then decided, we're going to take the gospel back to the continent. You've heard about barbarians. You've heard about Huns and Goths and Visigoths and all those tribal Vikings. I see a Viking right there, as a matter of fact. There he is, yay. And 100% Norwegian right there. We need to know that the purpose of these people was rape and pillage. That was the purpose. They weren't trying to share any good news. They weren't trying to advance culture. Not at all. And so what did they do? They burned anything that suggested faith, learning, growth. And it was the work of these monks who went into the continent and into England, into Scotland, and began to share the gospel. Now, friends, this was happening before the year 1000. And how did they share the gospel? And how was there a reawakening of the church in the continent? They did it by telling stories. They did it by oral tradition. The people couldn't read. There was no printed Bible, no tracts, no anything like that. So a monk would come into a village, and he, full of the Holy Spirit and full of God's blessing on his efforts, he would gather the people. And you better understand that the children were very important in this. This wasn't get that kid out of there. This was bring those kids in here. And they told the story of Jesus. Now we're talking about 1,500 years before print. And friends, when print came, it wasn't like, print came, everybody's got print. Not at all. It came to Gutenberg, and then over time it flourished. But not right away. Yet the gospel flourished. Why? Let me tell you why. The first reason it flourished is because God decreed it. God decreed that it's time for a reformation in the faith institutions, and I've raised up these people. And the story is amazing and fabulous. But it also happened because God has made salvation to be simple to understand. We have umpteen, well, as I said when I was doing those lectures, we have over 33,000 denominations on the Protestant side of things. Can that be confusing? Well, if you try to sort all that out, it can be. So we don't. I think it's important that we recognize that we're, and it's just like this morning. And why I said what I said is, the essence of the gospel is not in the dedication of a baby. The essence of the gospel is Jesus. The essence of the gospel is that the main thing of the Jesus story has never and can't ever change. Jesus is the main thing. I wanted to read to you a story from the Old Testament today that was simple. I wanted to read to you a story from the Old Testament today that showed the things that we talk about during this Advent, and that is the romantic call of God to everybody who receives his call. Friends, understand this. You don't receive that call because you have this kind of job. You don't receive that call because you're this tall. You don't receive that call because of anything that is wonderful about you or me. You receive that call because God has poured his grace on us and he calls us and draws us to himself. So if you have a Bible, you'll enjoy this. It's 2 Kings 4. So Kings is after Samuel, which is after Judges and Ruth and that whole business. So maybe about 10 books in. 2 Kings 4. Page what? 309. Now this is a very simple story. And what I'm praying is that we don't complicate the gospel. We don't add to the gospel. We don't subtract from the gospel. But that we receive it and we're filled by it. And this is the story of Elisha. Now, do you know who Elisha was? Well, I'm going to tell you. He was the receiver of the blessing in double portion from a previous prophet, Elijah. You've heard of Elijah. And we encounter Elijah even in the New Testament when he appears at the Transfiguration. Elijah's a big deal. Elijah never died, by the way, just for that. You can think about that if you want. But Elisha is his charge. And Elisha comes along, and he has a ministry that follows Elijah. So here we have Elisha. Please pick up with me, chapter 4, verse 1. Now the wife of one of the sons of the prophets cried to Elisha. So what do we have here? We have a woman crying to the prophet Elisha, and her husband is a son of a prophet. There were prophets around. Your servant, my husband, is dead. And you know that your servant feared the Lord. So she's saying, I've lost my husband. My husband is my provision. And in that day, this was the women didn't have a job at the office. The home was their job, and whatever gain they would have, the husband would bring in. I don't know what they were paying prophets in those days, but they had enough, and now she's without. But the creditor has come to take my two children to be his slaves. Now, friends, this is a true story. She's not making this up. So her husband, the prophet, and she had signed a mortgage of some kind, and they had debt. He dies. There is no way to pay off the debt. And so she comes, and Elisha's reputation had grown stronger and stronger that this is a man of God, and he can be trusted. Elisha said to her, "What shall I do for you? Tell me, what have you in the house?" And she said, "Your servant has nothing in the house except a jar of oil." Now I ask you, how simple could a woman and two children's life be? How much more simple could it be than this? They have themselves, and they have a jar of oil. That is all they have. Then he said, "Go outside, borrow vessels from all your neighbors, empty the vessels, and not too few." In other words, go around to the neighborhood and say, "Could I borrow a jar? Could I borrow anything that will hold liquid?" And they do this. "Then go in and shut the door behind yourself and your sons and pour into all these vessels. And when one is full, set it aside." Are you gathering what's going on here? He's saying, go get all these empty vessels. And if they're not empty, empty them. Bring the empty vessels into your house. You have a jar of oil. You have a fundamental, rudimentary, simple jar of faith. Now I'm going to help your faith. Oh Lord, I believe. Well then, help my unbelief. And he's going to do that. So she went from him and shut the door behind herself and her sons, and as she poured, they brought the vessels to her. When the vessels were full, she said to her son, "Bring me another vessel." And he said to her, "There is not another." Then the oil stopped flowing. I would just like us to think about what was going on inside that house. So she's kind of figured out what Elisha's got in mind here, and she lines up on whatever they have, all these vessels. She takes her faith, her only thing that she holds that has any value, and she starts to pour it out of this and into that. And it fills it up, and then she looks, and it's still full. Wait a minute. Let's try that again. Boys, look at what's happening here. We're not running out of oil. We've got more and more oil. And this is amazing. Bring me another one to fill up. Mom, we filled them all up. Can you imagine what was going on inside her? Elisha, you were right. It isn't hard. It isn't hard. It isn't complicated. It's obedience. You see, she could have said, "This is nonsense. This whole idea is nonsense." But she didn't do that, did she? She took what faith she had, and it may have been small, but it was significant nonetheless. It was mustard seed faith nonetheless. And she invested that. And the blessing was also simple and was also profound. She came and told the man of God, and he said, "All right, here's what you do. You go and you take all this oil and you pay your debts. You sell it. And you and your sons can live on the rest." And maybe this was the first discovery of oil in the Middle East. I don't know, but bad. That was bad? Yeah, whatever. Oh, you're disagreeing? Okay. The story of Jesus is not complicated. It's threatening. The story of the gospel is not too hard to understand. I think for some people, it's too easy to understand. Because life is hard. And life is complicated as we make it so. And so to have this story told to us, and then we're told to embrace this story, not to just give cognitive agreement with, but to say, this story tells me that there's a living God who will come and live within me and change me and bless me and hold me and provide for me and give me eternal life. I just have to believe that. I can't do a thing to bring that on myself. I have to believe that. That is really simple. That is the crux. Crux means cross. That is the crux of the matter. That God became a man, that man lived the perfect life that we couldn't live. He died the perfect death that we couldn't die. He rose from the dead, which we have no power to do. He ascended into heaven in a supernatural manner. None of us can do that. He promised that he is coming again. He also promised that while he's gone, which he is now, he's making a new world. That's the story, friends. That's the story. Now we're going to appreciate what our kids are learning about the story. We're going to appreciate that there are some things they might understand better than we do. We can learn from our kids and we can certainly enjoy them. So let's break into program mode. Thank you for being here.